Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, I'm very pleased to welcome singer Ciara Dignam to the studio. Ciara, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Lovely to have you here. We're going to hear one of your own songs in a few minutes, but I want to talk to you about the last few weeks and that outpouring of love and support for you and your family after the death of your dad, Christy. How are you?
I'm still very numb, which is probably why I'm able to sit here today. As you know, I was supposed to come on a few weeks ago before any of this kind of happened. And then obviously what happened happened. But I think I was going to kind of try and reschedule. But I kind of, it gives me something to focus on. I think anybody who's lost somebody knows, like, I mean, it can hit you straight away. It can hit you after a couple of months. I'm still in the numb stage. So I'm hoping to cling on to that for dear life as long as I possibly can and distract myself and work hard and just try and be a little bit kind of productive while I'm in this headspace.
It's only 3 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then you have all the months beforehand. And, you know, anyone who's been through, you know, witnessing somebody being ill and going through that decline, it's that really that takes the toll?
Yeah, that's what has you exhausted before you even face the inevitable at the end. You know, it's like he's been sick for 10 years, but it was always, he always came back, you know, and he went to hospital this week, actually, a year ago. And since then, that was when things got really serious for us and really tough. So it was back and forth to the hospital twice and three times a day. And then when we got him home finally in November, we were kind of sent home with a time scale, which he outlived like he always did. So when it actually happened, it was very, very quick when we were told, okay, this is kind of the final hours. And I was kind of, even then I was saying, look, I know, we had the hospice nurse come out to the house and she told us, and I said, look, I know you know your job, but you don't know me that. You know, he's always gone against anything in the history of medical science he has gone against. But unfortunately, he didn't win this time.
I don't know if you're at the stage yet where you can appreciate that you had him at home for that time.
I can. Yeah, I can. And mainly because I know how much it meant to him. His whole thing was he didn't want to die in a hospital or in a hospice. And I mean, as amazing as nurses and hospice are, he wanted to be at home and we wanted that.
Yeah.
And he did. And he had who we wanted around him. He had myself, my kids, my husband, my mom. Like he had his family. So that was kind of, that's what anybody wants, I think, really.
It's like a glimpse into a whole other world, isn't it? When you see how palliative care works, how the hospice works.
Yeah, those people are wired totally different. Like, I don't know how they do it. I really don't. They're special type of people. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes you believe in angels. It really does.
Yeah, and it also means that you're given the gift of having your dad at home for those last weeks
and they allow you that, it's amazing. They work to you.
Were you surprised at the level of the outpouring of support that you had from people afterwards?
Yeah, I've all my life, he's been a big deal, as you know what I mean, as far as people are concerned. Like, I never understood it, I never got it. Like, people would say to me, what's it like your dad being Christy Dignam? I said, what's it like your dad being a plumber? I never knew any different. It was normal for me, but I did not expect what the support we got and even the funeral. Like, it was like St. Patrick's Day parade. Like, it was
tell
madness.
Me about that, because I watched it all. I watched the footage of it and it was really public and it was lovely. It was heartwarming. I don't know how you got through it, because just hearing the singing of all of the crowds lining the street, it was amazing. Did you want it to be like that though? I mean, how did you feel about it going into it?
Initially, no. Even with singing and the way it's always been, it's been singing is a public thing and you can stand on the stage, but that's not who I am. That's a kind of an alter ego.
It's a performance.
It's a performance, exactly. But I'm a very private and very quiet person. And I've always shared my dad my whole life with the public, and I didn't always like that. And I just felt, in the lead up to his death, I kind of thought I wanted that to be a private thing. I wanted it to be for us. I didn't want it to share that day. Mm-hmm. And when we were, I was speaking to the undertaker who helped us, the funeral director, and he was saying, Ciara, you have no idea what's going on outside this house. And because I literally put my phone down. I didn't watch television. I didn't watch anything. And he's like, you've no idea what's happening outside. You need, like, people need something. People want something. And he said, you can kind of do it where you have your privacy and have absolute chaos because they're going to try and find where you are. They're going to want to be there. And I mean, they'd mean well, but he said, we need to try and organise that chaos. And that's basically what happens. And I slept on it and I rang him back and I said, you know what, you're right. And I think it was probably a little bit selfish of me to want to have that day just for us, because he did belong to everybody else as well, in a way, that aspect of him, the Christie aspect of him. He wasn't, you know, he was dad to me and Christopher to me, mum and granddad, and, you know, but I think it was important to give people that, to let people grieve and let fans be together, and they all felt the same way. And it was, in the long run, I actually would have regretted missing that, because it was amazing, and it was amazing support for us.
So when you had when you slept on it, you woke up the next morning, what did you decide to do then?
I rang him back. I rang the funeral director back and said, you know what, you're right. We do need to give people somewhere to be and somewhere to be together and to grieve and to celebrate him, because he deserved to be celebrated. He'd enough battles through his life, and the biggest battle he had in the last 10 years. And I think it was something he deserved, to mm-hmm. be honest with you, because mm-hmm. he'd had a lot of knocks. A lot of people get knocks, but I think to be able to have something like that, to celebrate someone's life, like who gets that? You know, yeah. So, and yeah. Who was I to deny that?
You'd nearly wish he was there to see it.
Definitely, definitely. And to be honest with you, he probably would have hated it. He'd have probably sat in the back of the car mortified. But yeah, it would be a good little ego boost for him, I'm sure.
Do you think he knew what he meant to people?
No idea. Because I had no idea. I've often gotten messages off people who, like for him or myself even, to say like, your music helps, or to listen to your voice or whatever. And like, your dad's helped me, but never ever mm-hmm. what I've realised in the last few weeks, no.
It's a lovely thing for you to have, though, now, isn't it?
It's very
a lovely legacy to know that he has
Absolutely.
Left behind.
Yeah.
So your own music then, and you were saying you need something to focus on, yeah. and this is it?
This is it. So I was kind of, my plan was, like 3.5 years ago, was to go in and get recording. I had everything ready to go, and it was literally 2 days before lockdown. So it was kind of, everything happened to avoid, like, to kind of stand in the way of me recording my album. I ended up doing Zoom calls back and forward with Don Mescal, who's an amazing songwriter.
Yeah.
So I was back and forward with him. He produced the album, and we're trying to, like, we couldn't get into a studio. We couldn't record. So I was getting all the writing down, getting all the keys sorted with myself and my husband, Darren, at home in the kitchen. And then once we kind of lifted our lockdown a little bit, I got my recordings done. Then I got really busy again, gigging, because everything opened back up again. And it was just more things standing in the way of, everything was kind of delaying the album coming out. And then I actually announced there a few weeks ago that I was going to headline in upstairs in Whelan's, and that was it. I'm done with all my pub gigs, and this is it now. I'm going to just go with the album, and it was full steam ahead. And that's actually where one of your researchers seen the video that I had posted.
Yeah.
Very awkwardly, because I'm very awkward with the kind of on the phone thing. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to just announce the gig and try and get that done and get me songs out there.
And that's why we wanted you to come in the first place.
Initially.
Just to explain to people. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it was just to come on and chat about that. And then literally in the space of a couple of days, my dad kind of took a turn. But since then, like the morning before my dad died, like nobody knew that he had taken that turn. So as far as anyone was concerned, the gig was going ahead as normal. And I got word that I had sold out the gig. So I, obviously it was, that's amazing. But at the time I was like, this is not something that I can even care about at the moment. And then the plan was, if that sold out, we might move to the bigger venue in Whelan's, which was like a far-fetched dream for me. And now we've bypassed that and we've gone to Opium Live, which is an even bigger venue. So it's amazing the support that
it's great.
That
and when is that happening?
So that's on the 27th of December.
Mm-hmm.
So any Aslan fans will know that that's a significant date. That was always the Vicar Street date or the Point or whatever for Aslan. And it was just something for me. Last year, my dad was too sick to gig. And for the year before that, I was with Aslan doing backing vocals just to kind of back him up where he was getting weak mm-hmm. vocally. And he felt that he needs, you know, I was there to kind of fall back on vocally. So that was just something that I thought would be nice for my family, even just to be. My initial thing was a big group, family group, a big kind of thing. They can all come and listen to me that night. And now people from the public are starting to, other people want to come listen to, which is amazing.
It's going to be a great gig. Of course it is, for the people who are there. It's going to be tough though for you.
It is going to be tough. But as I, like now, I need to put my energy into my music and what I want to do, because I've been working on this since I was 12.
Yeah.
You know, so I need to, I can go into it, into a hole and say, no, I don't want to see people, I don't want to sing anymore. But he wouldn't want that, and I certainly don't want that. And music has always been my therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I would have been bullied a lot as a child. I would have had a lot of struggles growing up, and music was my outlet. And I mean, when better to use it than now?
So when you're going through a tough time now, which of course you are.
Yeah.
This is what you do to get you through.
Yeah, absolutely. Where some people listen to music or some people go for a walk, my thing is singing. And this is, that's my therapy. That's what's going to help me through. And yes, the 27th is going to be tough. And every time I get on a stage now is going to be tough. But I need to just try and channel that and make it a positive thing,
mm-hmm.
and work forward. And like my dad said in his last interview, he wanted me to, like, his legacy to live on through me. Now, I am not trying to by any means fill his shoes. Like, I have my own shoes. So I'm not trying to be Christy Dignam. There's only one Christy Dignam.
Good,
and nobody can replace him. But I'm Ciara Dignam. And I can give him a nod. I'm not trying to be him.
Mm-hmm.
I can do a little nod to him in my gigs, and I can continue to sing for him.
And are you influenced by his music and Aslan's music, or what?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was it's in my blood. You know, I was, everything he listened to as a child, I listened, I would have, you know what I mean, had influences, like whether it was Queen, or like we'd listen to all sorts. And of course, with Aslan, like, they'd rehearse in the house. So all of that would be kind of, you know, flex of that would be all through my own music. And vocally, I mean, biologically, there's going to be little kind of things there that are
similar. You'll sound a bit like him.
Yeah. So yeah, his thing was always, like, you're a better singer than me. Now,
he was always singing your praises though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Pardon the pun, but he was. He was always pushing you out there. Get out there, Ciara, and do it.
Exactly, yeah. And I think when I was about 13, I remember going to him saying, that's it, I want to leave school, I want to be a singer. And he was kind of, oh, no, you're too young for that. And I was like, you don't understand what it's like. Because, you know, when you're 13, you've you think your parents have a clue.
Absolutely, like, parents have a clue, yeah.
I know what it's like to want to be a singer, you know. So even from then, I think he did have that chat with me where he was saying, listen, it's tough. It's a tough business. And, like, even as I said, I was bullied as a child. So you have that little bit of vulnerability. And he was afraid that I might be a little bit too, not weak, but, you know,
just be too hard.
Too hard. Yeah. And it is. It's tough.
Mm.
But you have to just try and weigh through it. Like, I mean, you're going to get your supporters, but you're also going to get your begrudgers. And my thing was always, I never wanted to be tugging off anybody's coat strings. Like, yes, my dad's a singer, but regardless of that, I was always going to want to be, I want to be a singer for me. I want, it'd be great if people could support me. If they like me, if they don't like me, that's fine. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't want to be judged because of my second name. I never did. I would rather somebody come and listen to me and say, she's actually quite good, and be surprised, or go, do you know what? No, not for me. Cool. Fine.
So what happens now? You said that before lockdown, you'd made this decision to set all the gigs aside, work on the album, get out there and do it in that way. So is that where you're at right now?
That's where I'm at right now. Yeah. Yeah. So going forward, that would be, like what you'll hear today, one of my own songs, and it's going to be just originals now from now on to kind of, and then like with me gigs, I think we will do maybe, because people are saying, would you be interested? Like, you have to do your dad's songs. And yeah, I'd probably have a little nod to him and pick a few songs, like maybe even obscure songs that, you know, just to keep that little bit of him in my gigs going forward. But yeah, it'd be,
it's you.
It's
You've
me,
made
yeah.
it very clear this is your music career
and
not your dad's, even though we can tell that you love and respect him so
much. Yeah,
well,
there is the elephant in the room or the studio or whatever. Of course. Yeah, I'm never going to deny who I am or who he was or any of that. But as I said, I'm Ciara.
Now, you had Darren with you earlier, your husband Darren Moore, and John Farrell here as well.
Yeah.
And you were you recorded a song for us, and we're going to hear that now. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Lovely to meet you. And it's great to see you so well and with all these plans in train.
Yeah.
And wish you every success. And I hope we see you back here.